up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Oh. Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
Oh, it's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
Well, welcome back to Jack. I'm Tom Holly. This is my Weber on the board. We have Mr. Kevin O'Neill with us as well. S&P futures up 1075. NASDAQ futures up 19. Dow futures down, up 121. We don't want any down days like yesterday. We were actually down yesterday. We're not supposed to be down. We pour money in. We go up. That's the way the world is here. Everything's rosy. 95%... effective Pfizer, that Moderna 94, now Pfizer says 95. Now, is Moderna going to come out today and say 96, Kevin, or what?
then it's sort of like saying I can name that tune in how many notes?
Yeah. It's one of those things. Although, the idea of having a vaccine is certainly a good one. I think this is again, for those that have not read the detail on this, what I understand, it's I don't know what the call for it is, but they're giving, they had, I think, Pfizer 44,000, Kevin, Moderna 30,000 people. They tried to get people of all walks of life. In fact, one of them targeted a lot of African-American people in the Chicago area because the original test didn't have enough. I believe that was a Moderna one. And they got people, they were interviewing some lady the other night who... Well, she said she took the vaccine, but she doesn't know if she did or didn't, because nobody knows whether you get the placebo or whether you get the vaccine. And the vaccine, I believe, is an antibody vaccine, is it not, to where you pick up the antibodies? So it's more like a flu shot, I think, than like a measles vaccine, but I'm not the doctor of the world. But so you need two shots. I think they're a week apart, Kevin? Does that sound right? So then they just let everybody go out.
I'll take your word for it on it, because you've been paying closer attention to that than I have.
Well, and then everybody just... I'm curious about how the way it works out. They just let everybody go. So, whether you're having Thanksgiving, whether you're social distancing, whether you're wearing a mask, I guess you're doing whatever you're supposed to be doing, or not doing whatever you're supposed to be doing, and you just go out. And every... some period of time, they must test people. And they found that out of the 44,000 in the Pfizer, I think the first 90 people, I could be wrong on that, the first 90 people who tested positive for the COVID, something like 81 of them or 82 of them were in the placebo group, and only 9 were in the vaccine group. Same sort of thing with the Moderna vaccine, which is somewhat different, I think, than like the polio thing or the measles thing, and sometimes they did this here in some really horrible situations, and they did it in Nazi Germany in horrible situations, where they actually gave people the drugs, and then they gave you the disease on top of it, which is, not exactly all that ethical. Well, honestly, Kevin, in this case, I bet you could have paid, well, it wouldn't help you that much, because I'm sure you could have paid a bunch of college kids to be exposed to the COVID after they had the thing, but you really want I think what Pfizer and Moderna tried to do is to get people of all ages, colors, you name it, to try and get as broad a group. So you really just didn't want all college kids, I don't think. So if that's the case, it does work to that extent. I mean, I think that's, positive. How long it works, all those kinds of things, whether there's any, we're talking about, 2-3 months here, so Any idea of long-term effects or anything like that, they can say that everything's fine, but I mean they can say whatever they want. But so far, it doesn't appear to be anybody who's adversely affected, that, at least not reported. Is that correct?
As far as I know, that's true. And the other thing that I read was that, Pfizer may be jumping the gun on its announcement because it has always been substantially behind Moderna. And when they know there's news coming out on Moderna, they just tend to roll out there with some kind of their anecdotal announcement, and that they really haven't delivered the data behind their claims yet at this point. Doesn't mean they're not true, but it part of when and how people announce things here. Maybe because they don't want to be ignored.
It says here it was 28 days after the first dose. Yeah, well, they also, I think one Pfizer has one big advantage on Moderna. And from memory, when I was reading out the list one day of everybody who got this Operation Warp Speed money, Pfizer, by not taking any development money, okay, but they essentially got a way better deal on the vaccines themselves. So I think we're Moderna.
Well, and they did get development money, but it was from a German company.
Right. They didn't get
it from the
US.
Isn't like they didn't get any seed money. They just chose to get it elsewhere.
Well, the people, there were seven firms that got, I'll use the term, a deal. And depending on if you got development money or not, the price you're getting per dose is affected. So since Pfizer didn't get any development money, I think they're, I mean, I got to dig out this piece of paper at some point, or maybe promise to do it, but one of us will do it because we've sent so much stuff back and forth. The groups that got, say, the $300-400 million, I think I said this yesterday, but it bears repeating, for development money, I think Moderna was one of those. Everybody essentially signed up for 100 million doses. Plus, you know, bonuses on top of that. Or when I say bonuses, with options for more doses if they can make them. So the people who got development money essentially got somewhere in the neighborhood of $10 to $11 a dose, from my simple calculations. The people who didn't get the development money ended up with the same amount of money, but they ended up with like $15, $16, up to $20 a dose, depending on the person. So I'm going to say that Pfizer has a lot more money to actually put this thing in production. It has a huge advantage on. I'll bet Moderna has to essentially subcontracted some of the production, where I don't think Pfizer will.
Yeah, whereas so, Pfizer, by not taking U.S. government money, is getting a better price per dose.
Right.
And they managed to get the money elsewhere anyway, so worked out for
them. Well,
that.
I
don't have a problem with it. They're choosing, you know, a business. A financial strategy that works for them, and that's, you know, everybody gets to do that.
Well, when you have $56 billion of revenue last year and a 16% margin because of four or five huge drugs that one or two just came off patent, but the rest didn't, you're about as big a fat city as a...
15% margin or 15% ROE?
What? No, if there's a
margin... 15% ROE.
Whatever the revenue was, 56, and they made 16 or whatever.
Okay, so that would be ROE,
yeah.
then
yeah.
That's a good ROE. It's a
yeah,
crappy
no kidding.
Margin, a crappy gross margin.
Well, let's put it this way: when you can sell Viagra for 19 years at what was it, $40-45 a pop, as soon as it becomes generic, it's six or seven, four or five. I think you're doing pretty well on it the last, say, 15 years, you think?
Oh, yeah.
But all
I'm saying is just when you said margin, a little alarm bell went off and said that's not a very good margin. It's their ROE. It's their return.
This is after you overpay all the executives.
Right. So, yes, as opposed to gross margin, which is basically revenue minus cost of goods sold.
I'm going to say that the margin on the, well, it's off patent now, but the margin.
So the gross margin on that's probably huge.
I'm gonna say, it costs you $2 and you're charging 40. What is that? 2,000%.
Yeah, I said. It's huge. Yep.
Is Lipitor still in Penn?
No.
All right, so those are the two big, massive drugs they had.
Hey, Chief.
They still have, but they're not in.
David writes
they're
in on...
Penn. Anyway, so... like I said, I have a client, and this... God, this bothers me, Kevin, when I didn't... Well, actually, this stock has not gone up that much. Because it is, you know, when you've got $56 billion, and you've got a vaccine that's popping in there at maybe $1.5 billion or $2 billion, I mean, it's good news, but it's not... It's nowhere near as big of news as it is for Moderna. There's no doubt about that in terms of what the stock price would be, movement, in terms of percentage terms. This will be a quarter Viagra and a tenth Lipitor, possibly. You know, so I mean, you have to look at it that way.
I haven't seen the product numbers on that, so I'd just be guessing. But my guess is you're right. You're spot on with it.
Hey, Chief, David writes it on Twitter.
And that's when you look at stock prices and you look at these things that happen. I mean, it's not on you. The first day the stock was up like $4 or $5. It's a massive move in Pfizer. So what did the chairman do? He sold some of the stock. Now it's backed up.
Well, yeah.
He's no dummy.
Again, he doesn't have the goods, and he's getting out ahead of the his stock would go down on the Moderna announcement, so that's the suspicious part of it. But Maddie's trying to get something in here, so let's let him speak.
Yeah, I don't think you can hear me, Chief. But David.
I can now.
Well, I don't know why you couldn't hear me a second ago. David's writing in on Twitter, and I haven't heard this either. And I thought I would ask you guys, as he wants to ask you guys. He says, "Am I wrong in saying that nobody's reporting how long either vaccine is going to be good for? Has that been included in any of the reports? Because I haven't seen it."
You can't say what you don't know.
I don't think they know. I don't know how they would know.
I guess you wouldn't know, but you haven't seen any early estimates or anything like that?
No, I thought I saw an offhand estimate at some point of a couple of years, which would make, you know, be like a flu shot.
Which would make sense,
yeah. That's
actually
what it is.
Yeah, that would make sense.
I don't think anybody said it's like a one-shot measles thing for life or chickenpox. I mean, they're not even close to that.
Yeah. Did you see the WHO statement that hey, it's not going to make this go away. It's just going to be one more tool in the box. But it's, you know, we're getting set up for all of these measures that we've taken. We're getting set up for these to last for an awfully long time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the H1N1, which was in 1918-19, it's still here. It's not gone.
Right. I'm not disputing that the virus is going to last for a long time, or that it's going to be won't be completely quashed. What I'm saying is that we're getting set up for, you know, restrictions on our movement, tracking people, all of that kind of stuff it just seems to me that every time there's some kind of progress, we hear, well, that's not really going to help us, and it's almost as if we want to continue a lot of this control for a much longer period of time. I hope I'm dead wrong about that, but
you're not wrong. I don't think you're wrong, bud. Yeah, we're not backing off on this at all. Now it comes down to, are you going to be able to go to an opera? Are you going to be able to go to a ball game without showing that you got your vaccine? I'm going to say no.
Well, that's, you know, again, you know, just show your papers.
Yeah, well, that's it. Your papers? Your papers, please. Mr. O'Neill. That's a pretty good German accent, wasn't it? Not bad.
That's not bad.
It wasn't very good at all.
All right, well, you know. I could be like Colonel Klink at least. He was bad, but I could at least be that good.
Again! He actually spoke the language, so.
Yeah, well, but, I think we're lining up for that. Being, you know, and now we're, I don't see where, with this last surge in the, all these numbers, a lot of stuff is involved in that. A lot of the stuff is, when you compare what's going on now with what's going on in April. In April, they were essentially telling people, because they didn't have enough tests or didn't want to test people, whatever they were going to do, they were telling people who had the disease just to stay home. So they had people home, and everything just transferred in people's houses. And the thing that I just don't, I wonder how the politics works, Kevin, because it's not just here. Is when you, when people talk all the time, and I think, I don't want to do that, so I have different people on of different points of view every day. Because I don't want to get essentially in a rut, which I do a little bit on money supply and those kinds of things, because nobody else is talking about it. I think somebody needs to hear it in one place, at least. So I know I get an economic rut a tad. I try not to, but the other, the thing that absolutely mind boggles me here is when you listen to your politicians talk, their view of what they think their society is, or who their people are, is so different than if you open up the door to the limousine and actually look around or the window. I mean, they obviously don't realize when they say everybody stay home or no Thanksgiving that everybody doesn't live in a two-bedroom house on Lakeshore Drive by yourself. I mean, home. I mean, you would never have made these policy type things in Richard J. Daley's time. You would never have made them if you grew up in St. John Fisher like I did. Now, our family, we could conceivably, we had three bedrooms. It was a bungalow, so it wasn't very big. We had four people. We had three bedrooms, and there was a basement. I mean, we could have kicked somebody down into the basement. We could have actually, and we had a bath and a half. We could have somewhat socially distanced, and I suppose every time you used the bathroom, you could have sanitized it. We could conceivably have somehow, you know, I guess, did something in place at home. You know, like Russell will be on in a little bit, says, you know, when this first came out, his wife works in the hospital, she booted him to the basement because he was basically still going to work and she didn't want any part of that. So he'll you know, I mean, somebody has, he has a nice home, and I mean, you can do that. But I mean, clearly, most of the people in my neighborhood had 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 kids, maybe one bathroom, you know. So you're not, the idea that you're jamming people home and you're causing some sort of a solution. I mean, clearly the Lori Lightfoots and the Jay Pritzkers of the world are out of tune with still an amazing amount of your society. It's just when people talk about,
it's,
you know,
even worse than that because of some of the hypocrisy that you get. So, you know, a Gavin Newsom, for example, tightening the screws in the state of California and then immediately heading off to a big gathering where nobody's doing distance or masks or anything like that, and you know, all the while telling people the opposite, and of course getting busted for it, and he's sorry, he's apologized, so we should just take that apology and go with it. But California legislators going off to their annual soiree at a Hawaiian resort, you know, I mean, what are we doing here?
Well, I think in some of that,
you know, why are we buying people's BS? And if they, you know, if they aren't willing to follow the rules, then why should we?
I think some of that, and of course, I'm not going to defend anybody here. Although I guess I will sort of defend them a little bit. We're also in this high-end group, Kevin. That when you and I couldn't get a test 4 months ago, they were getting a test every day. So they're, to any defense on their part, if you're a governor and you're getting a test twice a day, or whatever you're getting, and you're going to a room with five other governors, I think I would assume those idiots are getting the test every day, and they don't have it either. I probably wouldn't have the mask on. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you could do it for show. I mean, right now, I tell everybody, I'm a COVID survivor, and yet I'm wearing my mask all the time. Why? I shouldn't have to. But it's a lot easier to throw it on and argue with people.
I understand that, that they might not need it. But if you're the one making the rules, then you have to be the one who is setting the example.
I understand that. And what I'm saying is, at some point here, they had Lori Lightfoot on national TV. And the question I would like to ask is, right now, I was watching two newses last night. They say 1 in 15 people in Chicago have COVID. And what, 1 in 10 people they thought 4 months ago already had it. So let's say, pick a number, 40% of the population either probably currently has it or has had it, maybe 50%, and by Thanksgiving are going to have antibodies and they're no danger to anybody. At some point, where does that number have to get where we recognize that that's now a huge part of the population? Never? I mean, obviously, the vaccine people would want you to say never. They want people that have already had it and have their own antibodies to be essentially no different in the vaccine queue. Well, when I have to go, I should have to take this test just like anybody else. Now, I'm going to say that the antibodies I have, because I'm with them for the test, are probably everybody as good as this vaccine. And I don't know if they can prove me otherwise. If they can, I'll be willing to listen, but why should I take it? You know, I mean, so, I mean, this number is building. I mean, countrywide, what do you suppose it is? 50 million people have had it? They can't go to a ball game, they can't go to a bar, they can't have Thanksgiving? You know, what if we had a big party of 50 people, all COVID survivors. We're going to bust them? We clearly, like you say, the mentality is driving one way here, and we don't want anything else, you know, popping into it at all. And we should, right now...
Just comply, Tom. What did Fauci say? It's time to do what you're told.
Well, I think somewhere along the line here, and maybe it's happening, it's just not getting out. Somewhere along the line here, everybody in every county, or not every, but some of them, you need to have a 1,000-person random test, and I know you need to go to somebody's place, you need to give them a COVID test, you need to give them an antibody test. You need to know pretty much exactly where you stand with this thing. And having people come in randomly for tests, 100,000 people a day, and one day 10,000 people are positive, the next day 90,000 people show up and 10,000 people are positive, and you say that's worse. No, it's not. You said less people show up. So, I mean, at some point we need to know where we stand. And if it turns out that 30% of the, and I don't think we're there yet, but if 30% of the population have already had it, then I think we need to make some allowances for why the hell can't they go to work, right?
Well, I think you're right, Tom, and I'll also say this, that I understand, you know, from hospital administrators, I understand that they're concerned that with the rising number of positive tests, now, you know, I don't know how much of that is it's positive because we're testing people who we didn't used to test. You know, there's a lot of ways to unpack and hypothesize about that data. Not really the point I'm trying to make. What I am saying is they do have a seemingly genuine concern that when case numbers are up downstream, you know, whether that be a week later or 2 weeks later, that there's a tracking where that means hospitalizations are up, and they're worried about their capacity to handle that. If, you know, depending on what the trend line really winds up looking like, and so I understand that part of the equation, and that makes sense to me, and they want people to be careful, but two things. One is I can't think of a damn thing that we've done that has worked. You know, at this point. You have to look and say, well, why are we, you know, our solution to all of the masking, distancing, everything that we're doing is more masking, more distancing, you know, mask harder. It's clearly not working based on the trajectories we're seeing. But more to the point is that I think we're going to have to figure out how we're going to go on living and working around this. And coping with it, however we're going to cope with it.
That's clearly not the plan.
Stay closed.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you and I and everybody else on the show, this is not like we're anti-political. We're not anything. We just want people to do the job right because we realize that this is a horrible thing. We understand that certain groups of people have real problems with certain individual people. It could be 20 people that are. I mean, Matty Weber knows guys that are in really good shape in his age group, and one or two people had it, and they've been a racky 10 days. So, I mean, it's not like I don't think I've ever once made light of this thing. I mean, I sure as hell hope I didn't. But I also know that on the other side, our friend Dr. Johnson, Dr. Blade, says that he's never seen more mental health issues in his area ever. The amount of suicides are up. But we need to do this in the best way we can. When I say the best, not the perfect way, but the best way. I mean, it's surprising to me that when we were, oh, no, you can't be in a bar and a restaurant and you jammed everybody home. I mean, Kevin, you and I were talking in April. Okay, now Holmes, where is everybody going to get it? We had, what's his name? I won't even say anything bad about him. The guy from New York saying, God, I'm stunned. 85% of the positive tests now are coming from people that are actually quarantining at home. Well, duh. You know, so now all of a sudden, you get, and then you have what's his name? The guy with the big stack short guy saying they should shut down the economy for 6 months. Well, yeah, he lives alone in a 10,000 square foot apartment in Manhattan. He gets his stuff delivered. Okay, How many people are you going to let in your apartment to hang with you? You knothead. The answer would be none. Okay, so now all of a sudden we shove everybody home. Hey, guess what? People are getting it home. I mean, Kevin, this should not be... What do they used to say on the training floor? Thanks for the flash, Gordon? Right? I mean, this should not be a flash. It's going to go wherever people are. And everybody's got to be someplace. Where am I wrong?
And out of the political leadership, we're looking for common sense where none exists.
And I understand essentially why, because I honestly do be, maybe not, you know, some of the people we elect from Chicago and those kinds of places, but I really do believe, after talking to a lot of the, I'm going to throw you a bone here, some of the people from Ogden Dunes, whenever there was a party, I would talk to the lady who was the senator from that area. God, Kevin, these people have a dramatic amount of common sense. They seem like they want to do a good job. They'll talk to anybody. They're perfectly normal. And you'd say, why, this lady belongs down there, for God's sake.
So maybe you start out sensible, but they have a problem with stupid gas leaks at the legislature.
Or, like Carl said, the guy that he helped, and we'll talk about this more after break, the guy he helped go to Washington from Florida, as soon as he got there, I mean, they co-opt you. If you don't use their cell phone, they won't give you, you know, a committee assignment. What's the hell? Anyway, S&P futures.
Okay. Break time.
Yeah, let me see where we are here. S&P futures are up 12, Dow futures up 143, NASDAQ futures up 21. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks,
stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howe. He's just Mel Weber on the board. Mr. Kevin O'Neill with us. Have Mr. Russell Rhodes with us later. S&P futures up 12. Dow futures up 142. NASDAQ futures up 22. So we're resuming the rally. Yesterday we had a down day. We're not supposed to do this. Now when we were pushing the Dow down 167, S&P down 17, NASDAQ down 24. So those, still it was a down day, but it wasn't much of a down day as much as we've been up lately. Today we got the DAX up 44.3, FTSE up 17.2, CAC down 25.4, so moderately bullish over in Europe. We got the Nikkei down 286, it's 1%, Shanghai up 7.2%, Hang Seng up 129.5, so somewhat mixed over there with Japan. The autos were down for some reason. We're buying the cars over there. Here they are, I think. Bonds 0.87, so it's right in the upper 8s like it has been for a while now. 1 minus 0.56, where it's been for a while. Japan positive 0.03, where it's been forever. Oil up 86 cents, 42.29. Right up 94 cents, 44.69. So we're seemingly comfortably above 40. We're down to, 35 a couple weeks ago? That was bad. Natural gas up 7 cents, 2.76. Still way down from the 3.02 it was maybe a week ago. Arbob up 2 cents, 1.17. We've got gold down 16, 18.68. Silver down 25 cents at 24.39. Copper up a penny at 3.21. That's, again, eyes we've seen there for a while. Anybody got for us traffic, weather, sports?
35 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Off to a pretty good start on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. No issues coming in on the Edens or Kennedy. Eisenhower and Stevenson are all quiet as well. Down south on the Bishop Ford outbound side at Sibley Boulevard, the entrance ramp is closed due to road constructions. So the road work is closing the entrance from westbound Sibley. That's going to be closed until, it says, about 8 a.m. this morning. So you'll have to get on the Bishop Ford outbound on a different exit if that's your mode for getting around. Everything else looking good out there. Absolutely no other accidents or delays to speak of. Weather today, it's going to be a very pleasant day for November 18th. Partly cloudy skies, a high of 51, so a bit warmer than yesterday. Right now it's clear and 37 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 89 today. Right now it's clear and 60. In sports, the big news of the day yesterday, at least in Chicago, was that Cubs president and team architect Theo Epstein is stepping down after 9 seasons. Jed Hoyer, his longtime general manager, will take over as team president. Theo, in his 9 years, won a World Series, won a pennant, made 3 NLCS appearances, won 3 Central Division titles, and made the playoffs in 5 of his last 6 years after taking 3 years to rebuild the team. He is one of just 5 executives all-time in Major League Baseball to win the World Series with 2 different franchises. He, of course, won 2 World Series with the Red Sox before coming over and winning it with the Cubs in 2016. Chief.
What were the other 4?
Funny you should ask. I actually have that list here, it looks like.
I don't know. I'm going to say...
Can you name any of them?
I'm going to say Branch Rickey, maybe.
Let's see here. I don't have the full 4. I have the other 3 that did it in 1 in each league. And Branch Rickey's not one of them. So Pat Gillick did it, John Schuerholz did it, and Dave Dombrowski did it. So it was all 3 were in the last 30 years, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, recent vintage, yep.
Well, is that a shock to you?
No, I thought he would go one more year because he had 1 year left on his contract, so I figured he would play out his contract. He's always said that he believes in the Bill Walsh philosophy that you should only stay at a job for, 7 to 10 years, and then you should move on. At that point, your vision's been realized, and you really can't bring anything else to the table, and you should probably move on and look for a fresh challenge. And he said that when they hired him, and that was the big reason why he left the Red Sox when he was in his prime and had won 2 World Series, and the Red Sox went on to win 2 more World Series with his players. And he was looking for a new challenge, and the Cubs were the best challenge, having not won in 100-plus years. And then now after 9 seasons, and now that the game has completely changed to the point, and he actually talked about this, where everyone is operating on the same analytical, plane, and there's really no advantage there. He's and the aesthetic of the game has become really bad for a lot of fan bases. You know, he's looking for a new challenge and trying to find the next edge that's out there, and I don't think he knows what that is yet.
Was he going to football?
I would love for the Bears to hire him. I mean that seriously. Now that I don't think that'll happen, but I would love it. Like to have a modern look on the Bears, which they've never had. I would love that.
Well, the Hawks just got rid of McDonough.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't think the Hawks could pay as much.
So
for,
he could do the Hawks
Cubs
too. I mean, McDonough though. McDonough's power, you know, his contribution to the Hawks. It was more along the lines of attitude and approach to running the franchise, really great marketing, you know, those kinds of things. But he did not, he was not really involved in the, you know, building, the team building part of it. That, you know, that went elsewhere.
Well, plus I think Theo's leaving the Cubs pretty empty. The whole rest of the league has got their stars, and he got rid of a lot of his. He built up the minor leagues, then he traded guys away for free agents that are now gone, pretty much, right? I don't know if that team's all that deep.
You know, a lot of guys. I mean, you could look at the Cubs now and say, you know, you can debate whether they would have won the World Series without some of the deals they made, but you could look at the Cubs and say, boy, wouldn't they look good with Gleyber Torres in the lineup and Eloy Jimenez in the lineup. The question is, you know, did they get value back for them? Torres is the one that I'll always question because the reliever who I think he's been in St. Louis now, Andrew Miller. I think Andrew Miller probably could have been gotten in the championship year for less than they paid for to rent. What's the big lefty with the incredible fastball's name?
Aroldis Chapman.
Aroldis Chapman. Yeah, I think that Miller would have been just fine for that team, and he could have been gotten for less, you know, for a better value than compared to Chapman.
You get the debate always is, and you know, I go back to the '84 team. I mean, would I rather have taking a chance on just buying Rick Sutcliffe at the end of the season in 84 and had 10 years to watch Joe Carter here at Wrigley Field, probably, and I said so at the time. And Mel Hall. I mean, I'd give those two guys up for... It turns out they ended up signing Sutcliffe, and he had a nice career here, but that wasn't the deal. Everybody forgets that. They seem to... Most people will tell you, well, sure, Sutcliffe had, you know, a 5-year career and he was terrific. I love Rick Sutcliffe, but the fact is, they got him for 3 months. If they'd have lost him, you know, at the price of Mel Hall and Joe Carter, wow, right? That's a big number.
It would have looked pricey. But you know, the other thing is they've really gotten a lot of mileage out of Quintana as a which was the guy that went in, that was the Jimenez trade. So it's hard to argue with that specifically, other than to say I think you're going to find. And I said this at the time. I'm really, there's going to be a lot of times in the future when I look at that lineup, because I had seen Jimenez play in the minors and you know, there's a lot of times I was going to look at that lineup and say, boy, I wish he were, you know, he'd look good in a Cubs uniform. Now,
yeah.
At the same time, though, they also traded, you know, Dylan Cease was part of that deal. So, again, they may have overpaid for Quintana. It sort of depends on what Cease turns out to be. And I think he looks like he can be a major league pitcher, but I'm not sure how good he will or won't be yet. I think that's still up in the air.
Yeah, it's always kind of a crapshoot, but the idea that you put these people in your minors and then you give them all away for people half a year, I think guys do that a little more than they should. Now, if it's one more piece you think you need, you know, I guess. I don't know the numbers. I mean, I suspect the 1-year World Series is probably still providing benefits in terms of jersey sales and all the other stuff. So I mean, I don't, you know, how long that lasts, I don't know, but those guys do.
It's also interesting. It's also interesting if you think about, you know, some of the stuff that really looked like. I mean, if you go back and watch, you know, the 2015 playoff run where they won, you know, 97 games and won the wild card game against Pittsburgh, and then they beat the Cardinals and went to the NLCS, and they lost, but you knew, God, these guys are really young and they're really good and they're going to be a force to be reckoned with. And then sure enough, 2016, I mean, that was wire to wire. They were the best team in baseball from opening day 2016. They started out 25-6 that year. And then just cruised through, you know, you always have a few bumps in the road. Then you add Chapman and they're the best team, and you're thinking, man, you have Addison Russell at shortstop who hit, you know, 25 home runs, who's an elite defensive player, who's 23 years old. You have Javier Baez who's at, you know, 21, whatever. Chris Bryant wins the MVP that year, right? And you're thinking, just those three guys alone. Yeah, you have Rizzo. Yeah, you have a young Contreras. Yeah, you have, you know, Lester still has a few more good years. Arrieta still has another year with you. And you had to think, man, this team is going to be a dynasty. And then Russell, turns out, is like a mental head case and has this whole second life that no one seemed to know about.
Just a bad guy, and that
and he's
into his baseball.
Right, he's just completely derailed. Baez, you know, has had some good years, certainly, but you know, I don't think he's taken the step, certainly not this last year in the weird COVID season. He was awful. Chris Bryant, you know, has been very, very good, but nowhere near what he was in 2016. I mean, they had a lot of guys that really just kind of turned the other direction on him that there's no way they could have predicted.
I agree. No. Yeah, they, you know, and you have to be scratching your head and going, why hasn't Chris Bryant been better? Why hasn't he been the guy who was an MVP caliber player? And I don't know the answer to that. And in Javier Baez's case, when it looks like he's, you know, learning to be a little more disciplined at the plate and using the whole field, all of a sudden he just stops doing that. You know, I don't know what you do about that. You know,
well, I mean, we did it. We say I hate to, you know, say it's a Chicago issue because they're obviously totally different groups and different franchises, but. People forget that the 85 Bears were the youngest team in football. You talk about a team that should have been a dynasty, and then essentially went totally off the rails when what's his name told Wilbur Marshall he didn't think he was worth like minimum salary. They lost him, probably their youngest best player, and then you know, the same thing happened in 1963. You're talking about a team that won this is before most people's time, but you won the NFL going away, and 2 years later, you draft probably the single best draft in the history of football.
Certainly I don't think there's any first round in the history of football.
Well, but look at the rest of it, Dick Gordon. And it wasn't like they didn't anybody else in the rest of the. But I mean, how do you have the '63 team? The next year they added Butkus and Sayers. Was it 2 years? And all of a sudden, you know, Atkins flees. He can't stand up the old man. Ditka, they couldn't wait to get rid of. So it basically was two Hall of Famers in, two out. You know, what if those guys would have played together for 3 years or 4 years?
The other thing with the Bears, the 85 championship Bears, I mean, that fell apart on personalities as much as anything else. In part, it fell apart because McMahon started getting injured all the time. And again, that I attribute part of that to personalities because he didn't condition seriously, and he had this insistence on taking on linebackers, which was just foolish, you know, and that took a toll on him. So there were some things going on there, as well as, you know, everybody just getting really selfish about their personal position and their ability to make money, and that includes Ditka.
When he told Jimbo Covert
that was coming from the top.
Well, Jimbo Covert had some advertising thing lined up, and Ditka told him that that's not in the team's best interest when he starts doing that, and Covert said okay, and then Ditka took the role.
that's gonna work really well in building team cohesion.
Well, you know, that's a quick story, and I want to talk to Kevin about this Federal Reserve stuff, not in terms of the money, but in terms of how decisions are made. But if people remember way back in Dud Day, which was before 85, what year was Miami 17-0, Manny? Was it 82, 81?
No, it was 72.
Like
it was 72.
As my uncles, who are long dead, were crazy football fanatics. And one of my uncles said, "You never have to worry about George Halas paying the star. He always has. He paid Red Grange. When he paid George Conner out of Notre Dame that kind of money for a lineman, people said, 'God, you're paying that kind of money for a lineman.' But George Conner was that good, and he went both ways and blah, blah, blah." So he says he'll never lose a star, but the attitude always is that the last 10 people, 15 people on the bench are just bags of balls, and they're all interchangeable, and it doesn't matter who you got there. He said when they went from, just long before my time, when they went from 12 games to 14, the Bears were behind, and he said someday they'll go to 16. This is before he was still alive, and the Bears will be behind again. And I'm going to say that the Miami season, back in those days, whoever was that ran the team, paid Earl Morrall some huge number, like $80,000, to sit behind Bob Greasy just in case. And I got to believe that this shocked football. Absolutely shocked football. You probably remember, Kevin.
Yeah,
and George Halas probably...
Backup. You're screwing us all here.
Yeah, we have George Halas, I bet, went right to the bathroom. Not to have potty humor, but he beat her to ear sickness bag or something. He probably was retching when he saw somebody do that. And sure enough, when did Bob Greasy get hurt? Like the second or third game?
Mm-hmm.
Or somewhere early in the season? And Earl Morrall basically ran the table to the Super Bowl, and they started Bob Greasy in the Super Bowl and won a Super Bowl. But the Bears would never pay a backup quarterback in the McMahon era, as Kevin talked about, a real guy to be there just in case. Plus, McMahon didn't want him there. His personality, he couldn't wait to jump all over Doug Flutie. And they pretty much ostracized the poor guy from the team, which really sucked. But, they never had a real backup when they had a guy who was often injured. And that team, you look at that team and say, what could possibly go wrong? The only thing that could go wrong is McMahon went down, and he did. Right, Kevin? A minute of the guy in the Dolphins.
Well, and even when they won the championship, McMahon had spent a few games on the bench, and they had Steve Fuller, who was competent, although his instincts in the pocket were among the worst I ever saw. Wherever the pressure was coming from, he'd step right into it and get blasted. Other than that, Steve Fuller was a pretty competent backup quarterback, and once that slipped away, they were fairly well. Then we were down to Mike Tomczak, who wasn't awful, but he was an undrafted free agent for a reason. And then they had Flutie for a while. The whole team hated his guts. It just unraveled from there. Their problems, though, their problems were all leadership issues, and they had good leadership on the defense, but they had leadership issues, not personnel issues. In the years after the Super Bowl, they did make some bad personnel decisions, like letting Wilbur Marshall go. But they still had plenty of really great players on that team and could have been competitive. But they just let it slip away on them.
Well, then they fired Vinazzi just to piss off Ditka. Ditka reacted just like you would expect Ditka to react, right? So anyway, Kevin, I'm going to talk more with Russell about how these numbers all came about, because I'm actually stunned watching look at this money supply numbers out of the Fed. But I want to talk to you about how, we talked a little bit about it on Friday, and I told you I was going to bring it up again on Wednesday. How do these decisions essentially get made? What's the trigger? I don't know whether Pfizer could have said something the day before the election. If they didn't, why didn't they? What was the communication? Was it political? I don't know. If it was political, is it because they actually cared? They wanted Biden to win, or they've somehow got a view that Biden is going to be so soft on the pharmaceuticals, just like the Obama administration was, that if you flipped a coin, said which administration would be potentially be worse on pharmacy pricing, maybe the coin came up Trump. I don't know. Did they actually send a lobbyist to the Biden camp and say, if we hold off a week on this thing, you know, I hope this didn't happen, but if we hold off a week on this thing, are you guys going to make prescription drug prices one of your priorities? Oh, no, we got COVID on the docket. We got China. We got all kinds of other things we think you've got to repair from the last guy, whether they do or they don't. I mean, I'm into this, how communications actually take place, Kevin. And one of the classics from that was, for those of you that watched Major League, or I watched it many times, the third baseman, Dorn, comes up to the manager, Lou, with his contract, and he says, you can't make me do push-ups, it's right here in my contract. And Lou doesn't say a word, he whips the contract on the ground, pulls out his male appendage, and pees on it, and just walks away, without any communication whatsoever. But obviously, there was communication. I mean, humans can communicate in many different ways.
It wasn't without communication whatsoever. It was with very clear communication.
Yes, but no words, no text, no nothing that you could... Unless you had to pick the thing up and like, take it for a sample. But I'm saying, people can communicate in a million different ways. And you know, you see it in the business world. You see it in everywhere. Now, the question is, how are these communications getting done, Kevin? And I went last week and I looked at everybody's happy with this stock market rally. The people like Cramer are spending hours and hours a day telling everybody how this is happening, this industry's happening, this is happening. You know what? He's probably right. I mean, because everything on a relative scale, you know, what stocks do you buy? Well, I'm looking, I've never seen anything like this in all my years in the business, Kevin, that on November 2nd, the day before the election, I've got the Fed pouring in somewhere between $300 and $500 billion on one day, and we had a massive rally that night, and rally has not stopped yet. So I mean, we can talk about how, you know, the vaccine makes it fine for airlines, but I'll just say one thing: that if that number would have been the other way, I don't care if there were 12 vaccines, we'd be down, because we're right now all over this Fed money thing. To me, anyway, and my question is, how does that come about? Is that the Trump group thinking if we can get a rally, then it's kind of too late to change anybody's vote?
Yeah, at that point, it's too late. So, you know, I honestly don't have a feeling for the independence of the Fed anymore. You know, I don't think threatening a guy's job does a damn thing with them, because, you know, they're pretty accomplished people, you know, like who are going to work and do really well no matter where you put them. So
I'm going to push back on that.
Work. It just means they're going to do financially very well.
I'm going to say that he went to the White House for that dinner, he either got paddled or waterboarded, because his policy has changed light years since the day before.
Yeah, and that may, yeah, but I don't know that was was that a request, or was that a paddling from a force from the White House, who knows? But is a Fed chair going to be, go ahead and fire me? You'd probably make more going back to the private sector, and in a lot of circles, getting fired by Trump is a badge of honor. So I just don't think. I think we've been on this path for such a long time that I just think they're implementing, they're continuing to implement a policy that we've been
I get that part where I'm trying to dig out of you, because this is that's an unusual move, Kevin, and an unusual day. Now I'm going to say it's innocuous in the sense that. We don't care how the election comes out. We just don't want the market crashing with either guy winning. So we're gonna pour some money here to make sure that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
All right.
It could be that it was an unusual move that could get lost in the news cycle too.
Well, yeah. But also, I mean, now does it come from? I mean, is Powell sitting there at breakfast and all of a sudden he takes a slug of coffee and says, hey, we should do this on Monday. Why didn't I think of it before? Or does the call come from Mnuchin? Where does the idea come from?
Or was it planned out weeks in advance?
Well, and this is the part that gets me. I know in my heart of hearts, I don't know because that I can prove it in a court of law, I know in my heart of hearts that you can't, as a Fed, all of a sudden matriculate $500 billion out of nowhere. You have to tell people, they have to go buy it for you, you have to tell them you're about to buy it, you have to tell them accumulate it, that those people are slimy as hell, that they're going to get ahead of this thing like there's no tomorrow. So the question, and one thing in the Fed, they're, I think universally, they have the idea that the people that, that they have their ear, the Goldmans, the J.P. Morgans, if they make money at this stuff, it's just okay. That's the price they've paid to get in that spot, and they don't care. But now, how much money was made by this, you know, by people being able to, in other words, who knew about it? Is it 10 names, 20 names, 15 names? And I'd really like a whole, one of these days, somewhere, I'd like to just be able to sit down and say, take it to the top. Here's the idea. Here's where it goes. Here's who you tell. Goes to the New York Fed. Who does he tell? I mean, what bank do you call first? Do you buy it on the open market just on a, as a market order, or do you tell these guys to accumulate it? Do you have a chance to get ahead of you? I just would love to see the process. And I don't think I ever will. I mean, because I have a feeling that there's people with their finger in the pie all along the line. Just saying. And it's not me. They're my clients, which pisses me off. What can I say?
Yeah, no, it's my clients. Are gonna be insiders, damn it, I want to be one of them.
What did the guy say that Vito Corleone shot? I just need to wet my beak, you know? Anyway, Kevin, thank you very much, buddy. S&P Futures up 13, Dow up 153. NASDAQ Futures up 20. Be right back, Mr. Russell Rhodes.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello, North Bay Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen, Mr. Mayor Weber on the board. We have Mr. Russell Rhodes. S&P Futures up 11. NASDAQ Futures up 19. We're down a little bit from where we were. Still up. Dow Futures up 135. Russell, how are you?
I'm doing well. You sound good.
I drove by your school the other day, and there's nobody there.
No, I was not there. You know, if I'm not there, why should anybody else be there? So how'd it look?
I drove by Northwestern and Loyola. I was up north, and
okay,
nobody either place.
Well, there are a few students at Loyola. Not a ton, but if you're the type of student that needs to do lab work as you progress through your degree, you actually are on campus. But it's only about 10% of the students that are taking classes. Did you drive by on Sunday though?
No.
That's when you usually venture, do your out and about. So. There'll be more people there in the spring, but not everybody.
Did you see the 737 MAX has just cleared to fly?
Oh, good.
Boeing's up 5%.
Chief, there's a question on Twitter that's asking people, what would you rather do, fly on a 737 Air Max or get the coronavirus vaccine, you know, be first in line for the vaccine?
Or just get the coronavirus regular.
Yeah, or get the coronavirus regular. I'll take my chances with the vaccine. I'm not getting on that airplane for a while.
Yeah, I'm wondering what the... As somebody who was involved in Pullman, where we had all kinds of retrofits and all kinds of stuff, I wonder if some plane is sitting in Ethiopia or someplace, and it's been in storage. Does that plane have to be flown back here to be? I mean, there's a lot of. I don't think it's just software. I think there's some redundancies. There's more airspeed things and. That they're actually mechanical. I don't know if they can do them all in the field. They probably can. Or does planes have to come back to the manufacturing facility? I'm going to say no. But the 450 on the ground, I mean, how many hours is it going to take to get those things that have been sitting there for a year up and ready to go, not to mention the retrofit? We're talking about a job.
Yeah. Is it possible that they send people out in the field to do it?
Oh, yeah. Well, we used to do that from Pullman, sure.
Yeah,
I
wonder if Ethiopia Air has five of them, if it would be easier for Boeing to send, you know, a bunch of people out to go fix them in one of those cool hangars.
Well, I think as part of this is more training and everything else, and Boeing somewhat knew they had a problem, so they essentially, I'm just reading here, they took any mention of the system sort of out of. There had been some mention of it. I don't know if I believe the any mention. That the new system was not emphasized in the pilot manual. That's why a lot of the two guys that had trouble and crashed and killed themselves had so much trouble. So now are we talking about you've got to go to Ethiopia with a new, what do they call those things where you practice?
Flight simulator?
Are they going to, is everybody going to get a simulator? Is it going to be? Because they didn't have a simulator for this thing either, originally. So now, is that all part? We're going to get these details as we go. But now, are they going to have to fly down to Ethiopia? Yeah, I do too. Well, yeah, it's a massive. I mean, what's the procedure here? Does that mean every airline that flies them is going to get a simulator? That there's a certain amount of hours that everybody has to put on a simulator, and that whatever this system is now front and center in the. In the continuing education, shall we say, and what has to happen. I just wonder a plane that hasn't flown in a year, you just fire it up and go, or what do you do with the thing? I mean, I guess, but I don't know.
You want to make sure you got a decent oil change and check the tires.
Yeah.
And there you go.
So we set up a Twitter poll real quick just for our listeners, a very small sample. Would you rather be the first to fly the 737 MAX when it returns or the first to take the COVID vaccine? And we'll report on the results here at the end of the hour. What would you guys rather be the first to do?
Well, since I already had the COVID, I'd probably rather fly the plane. I don't know.
I was going to say I don't need the vaccine at this point. So
wow.
I would do the 737 MAX.
Breaking news. Both of you.
Are you an antibody positive guy as well?
I believe so. So I don't really want to out myself too much on that one. But yeah.
All right. Well, that's good. I guess that's good.
Yeah.
It's better than being DED dead.
Yeah, I know. No, I'm fine. I'm just,
there you go.
You send children out into the world every day for long enough, they're going to bring something back you don't like.
Well, that's, I mean,
catching a squirrel. But
well, that's what we were talking about earlier with Kevin. It's, yeah. I mean, if people don't, I mean, our current crop of politicians, essentially in big cities, to me, seem to have totally lost how regular families live. I mean, it's... Mm-hmm. We won't zero in on you.
Oh, I'm certain. I am certain of that with respect to the governor. That he just doesn't. There's no way that he has a perception on what it's like to be a normal person.
No, I had dinner with over at Audrey's cousin. I said they had three kids, and this is probably close to home to you. I had mm-hmm. three kids. One's in grammar school. They're pretty close in age, but they're right, like, one's in low high school, one's in middle school, and one's in high grammar school. So they're only, like, 2 years apart, right? So he said, okay. And then the wife teaches special ed at the grammar school. So she's there, and they have two cases in the grammar school. But the policy is, if the two cases are in the same class, it's considered an outbreak. So they send everybody home within, like, an hour, right? So everybody trundles home, including the wife. Now, the high school kid is still going to school, and the middle school kid's going like 2 days a week. The dads are, he's kind of a guy that didn't warm up too much with people. Finally, we start BSing, and he goes, who's making these decisions? The same person is controlling the same three schools. And all I know is that the same three people come over to my house every night. One's in a dangerous place. They need to be home because everybody's exposed. Meanwhile, the other two kids allegedly aren't exposed because their schools are okay, and we're all eating dinner at the same table. What's wrong with this? I said, well...
Man. I'm just starting to think that, we should... Unless you're a high-risk person, you should... not be overly concerned with picking it up.
I would agree.
Because now I read an article yesterday where they said, people in rural areas are picking it up and they have no idea where it's coming from.
Well, it's not as bad as bubonic plague where it came from the rats.
Yeah, I mean, but they just don't have any idea, so if people are, picking it up that way and not even 100% sure where it's coming from, we don't really know, short of never leaving the house, if we're going to be able to avoid it.
I've been hearing, too, that they think, some people think that there's been another mutation that's gotten less virulent but an awful lot more contagious, and the trackers can't even track because people don't even remember anybody was with them when they were coughing or anything. They can't even help them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Either it's mutated or maybe it's able to hover around in the air longer. Who knows?
Yeah, I don't know.
But it's all going to get fixed with a vaccine on January 20th, or 21st, or whenever the inauguration day is. Because the whole world's going to go back to good.
Yeah, and if you don't have your, then they're going to, you're going to have an app on your machine saying you got the vaccine, or you can't go anywhere.
I like that. And pretty soon they'll just chip us.
Well, I, for one,
go from one section to another, and a big alarm will go off if we haven't done everything we're supposed to do.
There are people that are trying to sell to firms things you put on your belt that if you get within 6 feet of somebody, the thing goes off.
So how do you have sex with a girl?
That. How do you have sex? Well, I don't, well, I guess if it depends on if... or your wife could put it on and it's a signal that she's got a headache. Who knows?
Yeah, I guess you'd have to take your belt off anyway, so I guess that's fine.
Yeah.
You do sort of wonder.
I'm so censoring myself right now and not going down a bad path. Just leave it at that.
Yeah,
I need to change the subject quick. Change the subject.
Yeah, the last time I'm going to bring it up, I'm fixated and this massive money supply move last Monday, the day before the election. And I'm curious how the hell something like that happens. Then we need to talk about, we got target earnings, which blew everything out. Lowe's not so good, but why is it such a flash for people that when you close down other stores, and I'm going to say that sneakily, mm-hmm. Target, which is probably closer to more a regular department store than Walmart. I mean,
yeah.
I, you know, I'm not much of a shopper of any kind, but if all of a sudden I did need, you know, I just got caught without, you know, blue jeans or a shirt or something, and all of a sudden all the other stores forced to close, I probably would go to Target before I would Walmart. Just saying. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know what that makes, what that means, whether it's a statement about my personality or not, but they're a little...
No, because that's just what's in your mind is the place to go. It has nothing to do with, you know...
Yeah, I mean, I think it's not a bad thing. In the pecking order of, it was always like your, well, there wasn't always a Walmart, but it was Marshall Fields, then you drop down to Carson's, Weebolts, then you drop down to Penny Sears, in terms of quality. Now, who knows if that's right or not, but I'm going to say most people think the Target quality is slightly above Walmart. Is that still true, or am I just talking about something 10 years ago?
I think you're right. Actually, I'm teaching portfolio diversification right now, and we're looking at stock betas, and the beta for Walmart is much lower than the beta for Target, and I make the students work that one out, and what it basically comes down to is, when the economy's going well, people are buying stuff, so you can understand the stock going up then, but when the economy starts to falter, people are economizing, and Walmart actually benefits from that. In a very quantitative way, we talk about what you're just talking about, that is exactly what happens. And that's why Walmart's considered a very nice defensive stock if you think the economy is going to slow for an extended period of time.
Well, shutting down all their competition kind of helps, too.
Yeah.
That
helps tremendously. But as far as Target goes, Target has done a very good job around this thing. Like, if we need something and we're not 100% comfortable with going into a store, Target has it really set up where you can order online and zip over to the store and call them and tell them you're in the parking lot, and they'll come and put whatever you have ordered, which is in a box for you, in your trunk. And they're also delivering stuff to people's houses same day. So I think Target did a good job of adjusting to all this, in addition to a lot of their competitors not being able to open their doors.
Yeah, I mean, it's looking back on it, Jay Pritzker, talk about stone cold ignorant. I mean, if we had the Manny Weber Russell Cheap Blue Jean store, do you think we couldn't have done the same thing? I want four pairs of 36-32s
sure,
and bring them out the front door and drop them in my trunk. I think we could have done
that. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. A lot of restaurants adjusted to that. Why can't every other type of store do that?
Well, you need the parking lot. You need you need the stuff. Of course, nobody cares how close the people are in a kitchen, because they're not in Jay's class. They're not in Lori's class. We don't care about them.
I'd never even thought about that one until you mentioned it.
Well, I mean,
I guess they're all wearing masks and everything else.
Yeah, they're distancing themselves in the kitchen. If you believe that,
yeah,
I got a bridge for you.
Yeah,
and we're going to worry about the
distancing.
We worry, and the firemen are distancing. Whenever they go to a fire, there's eight people in the back of the truck sitting on each other's laps. I mean, do we think the garbage truck drivers socially distance in the garbage truck? I don't think they're 6 feet apart. Do you? Or the police car?
No, there's two of them in the front seat together.
I think the policeman socially distanced. I think not. I mean, it's just a question of not knowing your... Anyway, how do you suppose the decision-making process went for the $400 to $500 billion that got wrung into the money supply the day before the election? How does that decision work its way down the chain, and who woke up one morning and said, we're going to do this?
It was four years ago,
I think. $400 to $500 billion.
$400 to $500 billion. Were they concerned that we may have a riotous situation right after the election, and they were trying to get ahead of it?
I don't know. I had trouble 4 years ago trying to come up with these numbers, Russell. But this time, if you look closely at the weekly release, the H6, mm-hmm. the because the month end was on a Friday, and somehow the weekend is on a Monday. The difference between the Friday's numbers and the Monday numbers are stark. You can actually see them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sitting there going, wow, these guys were busy on Monday morning. Now, whether they did that last year, because everybody knows last year during the election when trying to figure out whether Hillary or Trump won,
mm-hmm.
the spoos were down, what, 100 and something overnight, and turned all the way around to be up that much. And everybody thought, well, you know, it's all about Trump, and you know, and of course Trump took credit for it. In fact, you probably, if you went back and had the wherewithal, maybe you'd find that the Fed did some of the same thing then. Whether it's just they do it every election to make sure that everybody who wins all of a sudden looks like, you know, the market's choice or whatever. It could be that simple. But how many people know about it? How many people get ahead of it? I didn't.
I didn't. And I went, you know, but needless to say, because I was supposed to be prepared to report on what was happening election-wise, I went back and tried to find any patterns in the financial markets. And I didn't see that one.
And M1, which nobody talks about, went up $300 billion on Monday. M1. So talking about money that was just put in that day. They couldn't even get it into M2, mm-hmm. right?
No, I'm really wondering in the back of my mind if maybe there was... well, first off, I wonder if there's a weekend effect because people do... At least... I used to work, you know, on the front line of a bank as a bank teller, and we would always order cash on, we would have extra cash come in on Fridays because we would load up the ATM. And that was before there were ATMs all over the place. And, you know, typically a good portion of that cash was gone by when we came back in on Monday morning, gone in a good way. So that's the first thing that's popping in my mind, but I just can't imagine that in this day and age when not a whole lot of people are using cash, plus people aren't out and about physically spending cash. I don't think that's the excuse here.
Russell, to give you an example,
bracing for nobody can get to the bank for 3 or 4 days after the election because everybody goes nuts.
Well, if you look at the 6 month previous percent change in annual rates, the 6 month previous ending that Friday, the end of October, M1 is 32%, which is pretty friggin' high, and M2 mm-hmm. is 21%. All right, if you look at the 26 week number, which is which would have been the second, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was on November 2nd. It was 29.5, so up 8% in M2, and the 1 day okay. the difference, and 50.4 in M1. It's all in 1 day.
How do you
move that size of an elephant without letting all the right people know and letting them jump ahead of everybody else?
I don't know how you just kind of do that without everybody finding out about it. A couple of things pop into my mind, and most of them are related to it was their concern that, you know, did people, you know, did everybody go and withdraw a bunch of money out of the ATM, out of ATMs the week before the election just in case we ended up in a, you know, in riots breaking out in all the cities around the country, and you wanted to make sure you had cash on hand. If I were going back and forth to work in a normal non-pandemic environment, I probably would have made sure that I had a lot of cash on hand right before the election, just in case the world went to hell for a few days, to make sure I was able to buy stuff if I needed to buy stuff. That really is the only excuse I can come up with for that.
I just wonder
they may be seeing something that we don't see, and I assume it's somebody or a handful of people at the Federal Reserve that make that decision based on certain triggers.
Well, it could have been it could have been the Trump people deciding thought he was going to win and they wanted the market celebrate, or they might just do it every election to have the market celebrate.
Well,
whoever wins, you know.
Or, you know, maybe they, honestly, maybe they reacted to people acting like I just said I would have acted, where I would have made sure I had a little bit more cash on hand. When the pandemic thing started breaking out, my my father-in-law, who does not offer unsolicited advice very often, he told my wife, he said, you guys should make sure that you get a lot of money out of ATMs, or make sure you have a lot of cash on hand just in case things start to break down, which is probably an older person mentality relative to how we buy and sell stuff today. But that kind of stuck with me when he said that back in March.
And was he prepared to take all the cash out of his checking account, have it underneath his mattress, then everywhere he goes, people using the pandemic as an excuse to not take cash?
I know, isn't that kind of funny? That's why using the pandemic as kind of a caveat, that maybe it's something that normally has happened, but probably didn't happen this time around. I just assume it was a preparation to get in front of something that might have happened. Was there a drop off the following week?
Not really.
Okay. I mean,
we're not there yet.
Out there. Okay.
We're not there yet. The latest is still. We won't know tomorrow.
Oh, you don't get it's a Monday number that gets reported on a Thursday.
Yeah.
Okay. And then we will know tomorrow.
It's kind of a. But I mean, it is interesting. I would like the Fed out of the market.
I think that probably it's not what they're supposed to be doing. They're supposed to be doing two things. They're basically supposed to be managing inflation, making sure it doesn't take off, and trying to maximize employment the best they can. That's really all they're supposed to be doing.
Yep,
you know,
I
would vote for anyone who said that, not that they're going to abolish the Fed, but that they're going to make the Fed go back to doing what they're supposed to do.
I would take,
you know what I mean?
Was it Wilford Brimley in the Absence of Malice? I'd walk into the Fed meeting and that would have a briefcase that have everybody's ass when I walked out. The people they have on there, they're into this, you know, we're going to make everything okay. But they clearly are. Why should they not be in charge, be run by the same people that are running all the rest of the stuff? It seems like the haves are running everything. And so their goal, their job right now is to keep the market up. And when they decide they're not going to do it, they're going to let all the few people know the day before it crashed, they'll all get out.
So if we really start to see a sell-off and everybody's scratching their heads, you better get out, because it's the beginning of the end.
Well, I've gotten so cynical on this because we had a seminar way back in the day. We had a group of people. We had some people associated with us, and Dr. J was involved, and we were doing a lot of. I didn't go, but John did, and some of these other people down in Mexico, and they were doing a lot of seminars. So they all came up here, and we had a big seminar for a week, and. I did a little teaching, and my brother did some. And anyway, so we're out having a few cocktails at the Dear Departed Excelsior, and they just had one of their currency revaluations that day, devaluations in Mexico, which is a really crummy thing. All of a sudden, it's kind of what we're going. It's sort of what we're going through now with the Fed pouring so much money in. I mean, anybody who just has money in a savings account earning no interest, I mean, you're every year your purchasing power is going down. So we're doing it. The slightly more sneaky way, but down there they would just revalue the currency. They would say, okay, your pesos used to have 10 pesos to the dollar, now it's 12 pesos to the dollar. You know, good luck type of thing. So I said, I really feel bad. You guys all had your peso got devaluated, and the guy says one guy says, well, why is that a bad thing? And I said, well, why is it a good thing? He says, well, everybody who knows, everybody's connected. Takes their money offshore the night before, buys dollars. When you bring them back the next day, you're 10% richer than your neighbor. And I go, where does that leave the neighbor? Who cares? All right.
That's
a you know, so we're starting to get some of that same mentality here, I think, and I really don't like it. But no, those guys, I tell you what, if you've done a lot of, I have, this has nothing to do with the Mexican people. I don't know if I've ever met people that I like more, but I mean, in terms of people stealing from people, stealing money from your fellow man is a national sport down there, even more so than here.
My first thought when you said that is it's a national sport there. It's a global sport.
Well, even sort of more than here.
Yeah.
I had a guy call me one day. He was talking out of school because I didn't do anything with these people and never do. All right, this guy wants to talk to you. He wants to have we'll buy a beer over the Tripoli. All right, so I head over there. No Maddie Weber to talk to. So the guy says, I'm looking for a bank. And I go, what do you need a bank for? Besides, I don't have a bank. What are you talking to me for? Do I have a bank that I don't know I have? I mean, did I miss somewhere in my balance sheet? Oh, no, we heard you can find us a bank. And I said, well, yeah, I don't know we heard that, but I can give you a couple of names of people that own banks, and you talk to them. It's not up to me. Anyway, what do you need a bank for? Well, evidently in Mexico, if you have the taxation that goes, like, to your city, the city doesn't get to keep it like they do here. They send it to the government, and the government holds it for you. And then you pay your stuff on what your budget is. Well, if you go over budget, you can't get the money back from the government, like, till the end of the year. So if you go out, if you go and lend money to these people, it's guaranteed by the federal government, but you get, like, a huge interest rate. So if you're an outside person that owned a bank, and say we had $500,000, we could lend it to some town in Mexico at, like, a 10% interest for 2 months, and then the federal government would pay us the money before they waited. I'm like, wait a minute. So outside people, they're going to pay 10% to instead of just giving them their own dough? Yeah. And I'm thinking, this is just special. Anyway, I mean, you couldn't find a way to screw your people even more than that. They have knuckleheads like us making 10% on Mexican money. Why would you ever set something like that up? Whatever. Anyway, needless to say, I did nothing with this guy. I couldn't wait to get away from him. SP Futures up 8 and NASDAQ Futures up 19. Thanks, Pax and Jax.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, everyone. Thanks, stocks and jocks. I'm Tom Alley. Just from where we have Mr. Russell Rhodes with us as well. S&P futures now up 8. They were up more than that earlier. Now futures up 111 because we got Boeing up. NASDAQ futures up 18. So we're rallying here. We were down yesterday a little bit. I'll talk about it in a second. But we're rallying like we do most days these days. DAX up 41.3%. The FTSE up 20.3%. And the CAC around up 28.5%. So a little bit to the upside there. Steady to the upside. Asia, Nikkei down 286. That's 110. Shanghai up 7. That's 0.2. Shanghai's been quiet lately. Hang Seng up 129. That's 0.5%. Review of yesterday, the Dow was down 167. S&P was down 17, NASDAQ was down 24. It's after a huge up day on Monday, so not much of a correction. We're still pretty close to record highs. Bonds 0.85, it's 10-year yield. One minus 0.57, and Japan positive 0.02. So not much change there. Oil up over 42, up 62 cents to 42.05. That's a percent and a half. Brent up 77 cents, 44.52. Natural gas up 5 cents to 2.75. RBOB up a penny to 1.16. Natural gas was over 3 as we had an early cold snap, but now it's come back a little bit. Gold down 13 bucks, was down more earlier. That's 18.71. We got silver down 20 cents to 24.45. Copper up a penny, 3.21. Copper's been a nice trade. I did not do anything, but it got down to, I want to say 225 or something. We checked it out with Russell, but anyway, we got Forest Traffic Weather Sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Still very quiet coming in on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. It looks like there's a little red on the Kennedy near O'Hare, so some traffic volumes are causing people to slow down there, but no accidents to report. Inbound side looks okay. Same for the Edens. Eisenhower and Stevenson have been quiet all morning. Southside expressway is looking good, too. Only crashes in the area are out in the western suburbs. It looks like in Wheaton, Joliet Street at Roosevelt Road, there is a crash. And then just south of there in Naperville, Butterfield Road at Batavia Road, there is an accident. But everything else is looking good out there. Weather today, a nice day for mid-November. Sunshine, a high of 51. Right now it is clear and 38 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 89 today. Right now it's clear and 61. In sports, as we talked about for a good part of the first hour, Cubs president and championship architect Theo Epstein has stepped down as president of the Cubs after 9 seasons. He looks to take this coming year off, and hopefully COVID clears up, and then he plans to work in baseball going forward, maybe as part of an ownership group, so we'll see. He, of course, was responsible for building the team that won the World Series in 2016. Also, 5 playoff appearances in the last 6 years, including 3 Central Division championships, 3 NLCS appearances, 1 pennant, and, of course, the 1 World Series. Chief.
The pussy transformed the neighborhood into something. We're not exactly sure what, but something.
He had nothing to do with that. That's Ricketts and Crane Kenny. He's just on the field.
Ah. I thought he was high enough up where he was doing a lot of that.
Nope, he was president of baseball operations. Crane Kenny is president of their business operations, and obviously the Ricketts control that.
But he was, you know more about it than me, but he was very much a part of the same plan that Boston did, where he essentially took over the whole neighborhood.
He's responsible for baseball on the field. That's it.
All right. So he didn't. Mentioned it in any meeting. By the way, if we owned all the saloons, it'd be nice.
I mean, I'm sure he certainly took advantage of the revenue streams to buy players and things like that. But that's ownership and the business side's decision. He was responsible for on the field.
The guy who's taken over, you think he's ready?
Jed, I think so. He's been with Theo for 17 of the last 19 years. And kind of been his right hand man, and I think he's ready, and I don't think much will change as far as how they look at players and stuff like that. So we'll see, but I do think if you removing Theo, he made an interesting comment at his press comments yesterday. He said, you know, I think I've proven that I'm pretty good at, you know, coming into a situation and turning an organization around and then, you know, building something from the ground up and then triumphing and winning at a certain level. And he goes, and I think, you know, if I look at myself in the mirror, maybe I'm not as good at maintaining that success. And maybe I get bored with the maintenance mode of the whole thing, and that's when I look for my next challenge. So it'll be interesting to see if Jed, you know, is good at sort of, keep sustaining the success and adding on to it, or if he needs the starting from the bottom challenge too. I don't know.
Well, I mean, it's, and Russell, feel free to pile in. And when there are people that, you know, there are some, different types of franchises, you think of Dallas back in the day with the, the Tom Landry, you think of the Dodgers when, God, how many years did they go and they only had, what, three managers? They had Walter Alston for 20-some years and what was the other guy, Tommy Lasorda for 20-something. By the way, he's real sick, isn't he?
Yeah,
I was going to say he might be the next person we lose this year. Go ahead. He's in his 90s. I mean.
Yeah, he's 93 or something. But
he's 93, yep, exactly.
Yeah.
And but you see, those people have... there's always like one thing in common, and I asked Tom Landry what the secret was in Dallas for all those years, where they always had a terrific team. You know, sometimes they won, sometimes they didn't. But he goes, it's very simple. He goes, the owner does what the owner's supposed to do. The general manager does what the general manager is supposed to do. I do what I'm supposed to do. We're all on the same page. We don't mess with each other.
There's some logic to that in probably every type of business.
Yeah. And, but I know Dallas is a big shtick. Everybody always has an edge. And, you look at the Patriots, and, their edge, maybe it isn't anymore, but I remember reading this big, long deal where their edge is, since they very rarely, although now, in this current era where you can get rid of people for salary cap and you can get actually number one picks you never used to be able to get. They've actually drafted pretty well, Matty, for a team that always is in the hunt. But they read this big thing about the bottom four rounds, like 3 through 7, over a period of like 15 years, where they graded all these people, and one year that they traded a number 5 pick for, say, 2 7 picks. And just out of the blue, the number 5 pick that they traded to whatever team it was, you know, drafted... you know, Thomas, and he's out of football in a year. And the two guys that they drafted, one of them was still on their team, but one of them at least made the practice squad and did some special teams duty, or they were able to trade him to somebody else for a guy who's now special teams, and you know, he's in the rotation. Their management of the bottom 10 people in the roster in the last three rounds of the draft is absolutely spectacular. And you know, you wonder, you know, who's doing that. And now Dallas used to have tryouts every year for people. This one, they used to have, they used to do, what, 13 rounds, maybe? 14 in the draft?
Yeah.
A lot more
than
now.
They went for a long time.
Yeah, now there's only 7.
I mean, it was going on for days, yeah.
And, they would have tryouts for everybody who didn't get drafted. And they said every year they averaged somebody who at least they got a look at, and every 5 years they found a starter. And that was their way back in the Staubach era of getting somebody extra, because they felt that last guy on the roster, if we could get one every year to make up for the guys we're not getting in the draft. I mean, to have that kind of an edge is a lot of work. You know, and you look at the Bears drafts over the last 25 years, and you see the years where they only have 3 picks and stuff, and You know, it's not a shock that they don't have very much depth. It just isn't. They're just not a well-run organization. Would you agree to that, Manny?
I would, yeah.
Now, the Cubs were for a while, but now you have to wonder if Bryant just goes, because I don't see them giving him some big thing, and Javier Baez just drops back into swinging and everything, and who knows what happens to Schwarber. He goes to the Yankees for a draft pick or something. What have you got left? I mean, you and I are starting or what?
Yeah, the cupboard's not bare. I mean, they just won the division. That said, you know, you're right. Bryant is, a lot of these guys are entering the final year of their deal, including Rizzo, including Bryant, including Baez. Ian Happ looks like the next big star type player. Schwarber, you know, did not have a great year, so you wonder what he's going to be. You know, Contreras is very good at catcher. But yeah, they have some decisions to make, and they still have, you know, Lester comes off the books at his deal, so that frees up some space. But they didn't make any money last year. I mean, no teams did when you have no fans. So it'll be interesting to see what they do. And I think that's a reason why Theo stepped away with 1 year left on his contract, because he looks at this coming year as no one's going to spend any money. No one's going to do anything. There won't be fans in the ballpark. And, you know, what's the point?
What do you think?
If you're going to take a sabbatical this coming year, it might be the year to take a sabbatical.
Exactly.
And come back when everything's normal. I could totally understand that.
Well, do you think the move to the cable, this particular timing, is with their own station, has been a net positive or negative at this point?
Well, I think it has to be a negative. I don't know how it could be a positive. Now, I don't know if it was going to be a positive, you know, under normal circumstances, to be honest. But it definitely, this first year, I mean, there's no way it was a net positive. What pisses me off is I cut the cord a few years ago, and when I was picking streaming providers, the reason I switched to Hulu a year ago was strictly because they were the only streaming service that was going to carry the marquee network. And YouTube TV was not going to carry it. You know, none of the other ones were going to carry it. You know, we saw that RCN has it. Comcast added it literally the day before the season started. So regular cable has it now, but Hulu was the only streaming service. So great. Well, then the season is delayed. Then in July it finally starts, and I watched it, and I watched, you know, every Cub game like I normally would. And it was fine. The channel was fine. It was, you know, good quality production. You know, they had some pre- and post-game stuff that was okay if you're into that sort of thing. And, you know, it's fine. Well, then I read very sneakily that, last 2 weeks ago, Marquee Network dropped by Hulu. And, so I'm like, okay, so what does that mean? Am I not going to be able to watch Cubs games next year unless I switch back to regular cable? Or is someone going to step up? Or is there going to be an a la carte option? Or are they just going to lose all of their, you know, 45 and under fan base, which is the future of their, you know, their whole viewing audience? Like, I don't know.
Are they on both Dish and DirecTV? They probably are. I'm not sure.
I assume they are. Yeah, they are, because the bars carry them.
Okay. Yeah, that's, yeah, you wonder what, Russell, in sort of the same vein, what do you suppose the economics of, you guys are close to this, and I don't want you to talk about your place, but what's the economics of, college sports? It's college basketball. I understand Loyola's pushing theirs out a little bit because they had some COVID people on the team, right, or something?
Yeah. I can't talk about individual students at all, but I will tell you I do have some basketball players in my classes. But you know what? I have a thought well beyond that one as far as college sports goes that I was going to try to sneak in on you.
Yeah, go ahead. Talk about it.
One of the things that people are thinking is that the new administration might try to do free state school. So what's the incentive to play sports in college? And does that go along with now you got to start paying these kids to, you know, actually straight up paying them to show up and play football for your school?
I mean, you pay them straight, not cheat and pay.
Right. I do believe they get some sort of stipend now.
Are they doing? It depends on the league, right, Mandy? Some get like
it does. It depends on like the Power Five conferences. You actually get paid a little bit more than I know. I just because I went to Memphis, I always kind of I pay attention to their situation, and I know what they give players is a little bit less than you know,
what's it like? Is it like a
board? But
it's like a grand
really,
a month.
I feel like it's a couple $200 a week or something.
Something like that.
It's enough money that if I was a college student and I needed it, it would be enough money that I can, you know, go to McDonald's or whatever every day, and I don't have to worry about that part of my life. You know, it's enough money to get by with all the other living expenses being taken care of as well. Doesn't leave you out when all your friends. I sound so corny right now, but it doesn't leave you on the outside when all your friends are going to go see the new James Bond movie or something, and you can't go because you don't have any cash. You know, I mean, it's enough to make sure that you.
It's become a full time job.
You know, and it is a full time job, and I see it. You know what? I see it firsthand. I'm very popular with the athletes at Loyola do get to register for classes 2 days before everybody else, which I think, you know, some griping came up in one of my classes when the other students found that out on Monday, because we're registering for the spring semester right now. And I said, hey guys, you know, I'm one of the first people that, you know, doesn't really think sports has a place in colleges, which I really don't. But you got to understand, these guys have a set practice schedule that they're going to be stuck with in the spring, and they've got to figure out how to get classes around it. So I don't have a problem with them getting to register first. You know,
they also get the soft touch classes.
Right? That's not that. Are you saying that's why I'm popular with them?
I just said, you know, there was a guy at Notre Dame. He became known as the coach. Coach Leahy, because
trust me, I'm not that. That's not me. I've had them talk to me about grading.
I would never have guessed.
On the other side of it is, like, I had one kid who was on the golf team last spring and took a class from me, and he always missed Fridays because they were traveling to go play somewhere.
Yep.
And he would show up before class on Monday morning, an hour before, and I would go over what I did on Friday. You know, because I'm flexible like that with them. That's really why they like me. Because I understand how difficult it is to. I see it how difficult it is to play a sport and be in college at the same time. It's horrible. Yeah,
we had a guy that was known as the coach.
I'm flexible for him. Yeah.
Yeah, Coach Leahy used to get all the guys. Mm-hmm. In fact, I took one class with him on urban economics, and who was in my class was Dave Casper and a few of the other guys. You know, Hall of Famer Dave Casper. But no, the guys all showed up for class and everything, and they, you know, it wasn't like they didn't study, they did. But you got, you're right, mostly it's timing. You can get the courses when you need them in terms of time, because you're practicing every day. But in my era, it wasn't a full-time job. I mean, those guys actually could go home for the summer and make some money. You know, I mean, some of them got jobs that were, you know, maybe they shouldn't have gotten, but simple fact is you had, you know, 9 weeks, 10 weeks to go home and do something and make some scratch. You know, plus, you know, a pitcher of beer was a buck and a half. So, you know, you didn't, but now if you're there all summer, which they are, and, I mean, how do you not, I mean, when they had Notre Dame got this thing where they got basically spanked by the NCAA, and but most of the infractions were stuff like you wouldn't even believe. Like, one kid's uncle died, and somebody gave him, like, one of the coaches gave him $75 to get on the Greyhound bus home for to go to his uncle's funeral. I mean, giving somebody a ticket on the Greyhound bus is not exactly going on somebody's Rolls Royce. I mean, what are we talking about? That kind of stuff happened.
I think that's why they get the stipend now, so that it just so that those things don't happen.
Well, they used to require the kids, whenever you went on the road, you had to wear a blue blazer, right? So you look sharp.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you couldn't buy them the blue blazer.
They can do that now because the coach that was at Memphis that is now at Florida State, Mike Norvell. He actually, the players for each game would have matching suits. They would wear matching suits if they walked into the stadium, and then they'd change in their football clothes and everything. But his thinking was, if you play 4 years for me, when you finish, you're going to have four suits that you can wear when you go out into the professional world.
That makes sense.
I thought that was, you know, that's the kind of guy that you want coaching for you.
Manny, do you have four full suits? I don't know. Manny Weber has four full suits.
I've never said he's not wearing a suit when I see him at 7 a.m.
No,
hell no.
But what if?
Nor am I.
Just let's spin into the, you know, the economics of our colleges going to come out of this somewhere in the same way. I mean, some schools seem to be doing all right. I mean, Notre Dame managed to dodge the bullet, and the everybody ran down to the field and everybody's going to get COVID. Well, obviously that didn't happen. Or else we'd have heard about it. Are we talking next semester back to normal? Next year, vaccine?
I don't think next semester back to normal. We're not planning for back to normal next semester. I had a faculty meeting yesterday with non-tenure track business professors, and I think 3 of the 14 of us are going to be back on campus teaching, and that we had volunteered to. Be back on campus teaching, and I'm one of them that held up my hand and said, "Sure, I'll teach in person." And then they gave me a 4 to 5 o'clock in the afternoon class Monday, Wednesday, Friday.
They didn't exactly reward
you. I don't know if I would have volunteered for that Friday class.
Good Lord.
Where are the students hanging? Are the dorms open?
Some of them will be allowed to come to class, and we're going to have they're going to have the choice to come to class or not. And I'm also going to be streaming when I'm teaching. And the reason I got that god awful time is that we have 30 minutes between classes instead of the normal 10 or 15, so that they can come in and clean the room real quick.
Okay.
So that's why I ended up with that lousy time. But I said, yeah, I'll come. Before I had like an 11 to 12 and a 12:30 to 1:30 class, and after I held up my hand and said sure I'd come down there, they moved my class to 4 o'clock.
Well, then you're never going to get a basketball player at that hour.
I know. Well, I'm going to maybe work something. I think I'm actually going to work something out for that Friday session where that one's online or something like that, because nobody's going to want to come to class at that time.
Well, are you guys quarter or semester?
We're quarter for graduate school, semester for undergraduate.
All right.
So well. The spring classes are going to be my class. They're setting up the classroom where I can stream. I'll give you a link if you want to watch. And beyond that, the students can choose to come to the classroom as well. Now, I surveyed my students before we decided what we were going to do in the fall to get an idea of how I was going to have to deliver the class, and I got about a 50-50 in-person versus online response. I'm going to do the same thing because registration's going on right now, and as soon as my my classes fill up, I'm going to send an email out, and I'm going to basically get feedback from all of them and see what they think.
You mentioned something earlier. We've got a few minutes here, but we'll dig into it a little bit. Do you think that you should teach a class on, like, national TV to the citizens of this country about where all the money is coming from or not? Now we're talking about...
I'd love to do that.
Tell me where I'm wrong here. We're now up to seven... Our deficit is $22 billion, a trillion, right? Total.
Mm-hmm.
But we also have this year the Fed has I'm looking at the Fed balance sheet has ballooned by $3.5 trillion on its way to. If we have more stimulus by the end of the year, it could be $5 trillion. Well, if that's the case, and the tax numbers aren't going to say too heavy, but if people think, I was talking to Audrey about this yesterday. People think that the federal government is bigger than God. I mean, they're not.
They think that the money doesn't come from anywhere.
Well, if you split their revenue in half, and I'm not going to go into Trump's tariffs, but the payroll taxes pretty much go in one door and out the other, right? So you can't really count on those to do anything. So you've got the income taxes, which is about $1.6 trillion, right? $1.7 trillion, something like that. Well, mm-hmm. when you start talking about $5 or $6 or $7 trillion in the hole in 1 year, talking about a calendar year, they obviously will have to. You're talking about 3, 4, 5 years of taxation you pissed away in 1 year. I mean, does anybody think that somehow that's not doesn't have to come back at some point? I mean, granted, we could grow out of it some. I mean, that would be nice, but still, it's a. I mean, people just think, okay, yeah, we'll just make the state schools free. Let's get rid of student debt, which I think we should do something with student debt. But that, when you look at the magnitude of the numbers, what are we talking about? If you see somebody, you know, if you see Matty Weber sitting in a saloon winging everybody $100 bills, you'd say, what's he doing? Well, if he's an eccentric gazillionaire, you say, well, I guess that's okay. He said he just borrowed the money from the city and is now not going to be able to give it back. You're going to say, I better get a couple of those hundos because my tax bill's going up a couple of hundo, right? It's got to come from someplace. And, yeah. I'm not so sure that anybody, you close your hands over your ears and you say, I don't want to hear it. It's coming from somewhere else or what? A lot of these colleges, I see a lot of these small tier colleges going under, don't you? Like the Eastern Illinois, the Central Wisconsin.
Being consolidated. And a really smart guy at University of Chicago about 5 years ago said, just watch. You're going to see a consolidation in the, within the higher education area because people could deliver things online. There's a bigger economy of scale, et cetera, et cetera. So smart guy said that to me a long time ago.
Plus, as usual, you're screwing the poor people. Anyway, Russell, thank you very much, bud. SP Futures up 8. NASDAQ Futures up 13. Dow Futures up 111. Remember, big news of the day was the 737 has been cleared to fly. We'll see how long that takes, but Boeing's up.
Chief.
I'll be back tomorrow. Stocks and Jacks.
By the way, Chief, real quick, our poll, just to touch on that, 36 votes so far, very small sample size, exactly 50-50. Would you rather fly the 737 MAX or be the first to take the vaccine? Exactly 18-18. We'll be back tomorrow.
Okay.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.